Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Skibbity toilet there, Geekscapists. Welcome to a brand new Geekscape episode. I'm Jonathan London, your host. If this is your first Geekscape, well, strap yourselves in for some pop culture talk. I've got a great episode today. We're going to be talking some news, some reviews with my good friend Fernando Pinto, who has a brand new comic up on Kickstarter called Gun Punch. But listen, here's the important thing you Geekscapists need to know about Fernando. Fernando's been a part of Geekscape since before Geekscape, because he did the logo for Geekscape, and before that he did the logo for Geekdrome, the predecessor podcast to Geekscape. And now Fernando is here on Geekscape to talk about his brand new comic, Gun Punch. I think it's a, I'll have him tell you, but I think it's a collection of the Gun Punch stuff on Kickstarter now, and it's already funded, so like, don't stress. No, actually, I like to see my friends succeed. And if you can hit some of those stretch goals, I think there's some cool stuff in there for you. That being said, Geekscape is driving me crazy because people are like, can I come on Geekscape? Can I come on Geekscape? It's just booked solid. And I love that. I love that people want to come on Geekscape and talk to me. And I love talking to people. I'm an addict. But if you want to hear those conversations, like last week's episode, how awesome was Chris Black talking about Monarch, Legacy of Monsters, the Godzilla show on Apple? I loved hearing about him show running that show. There's a lot of Geekscape booked for the next couple months. Next week we got, I hope I don't mispronounce their name, Lila Sturges. Lila is a writer on things like Jack of Fables. It's one of the Fables books with Bill Winningham. I know Lumberjanes is one of the books that they've also written on. A lot of you guys like those indie comics like Lumberjanes, but also they've written like JSA for DC and all sorts of cool stuff, like a Zatanna book. And then the week after that, we're going to talk filmmaking. I got my buddy Dan Brown, who wrote and directed a movie that's like number 6. Maybe it's 5. Maybe you can get it to number 1 on Netflix US. It's called Your Lucky Day. And it's an indie film. And the reason you might be like, I think I've heard of that. Yeah. And Angus Cloud, the late Angus Cloud, is in the movie. He was in Euphoria. Like he became a kind of a star before passing away from Euphoria. And Dan put him in this movie, Your Lucky Day. And I think it was completed after Angus passed away. Sadly, I hope he was able to see some form of the movie before he passed away, but Dan's going to be on the podcast in 2 weeks to talk about that movie. If you want to prep for that, it's on Netflix right now, on the most popular Netflix programs in the US. All right, we got tons to talk about. It's coming at me fast. I'm going to go to the list of things to talk about. Okay, I saw that Dune movie, part 2. I'll tell you guys my thoughts on Dune, part 2. I'll keep it spoiler-free. X-Men 97 is about to premiere. I've been catching up on the old X-Men animated cartoon episodes. And already, right before it premiered, Marvel, Disney replaced the showrunner on that one. We're going to be talking some comics. And also, an old Geekscapist who was a guest on Geekscape wrote a letter to Marvel saying you need to release the 1994 Fantastic Four movie. The very, very, very maligned Fantastic Four movie that is like a cult classic now from 1994, the Roger Corman one. And he wrote this letter, and it's gone kind of viral, saying, hey, Marvel, the reason y'all can't make a good Fantastic Four movie is because you're cursed, because you never officially released the Fantastic Four movie from 1994. And if you fix it, the curse may be lifted. And that's our good friend Joseph Culp, who played Dr. Doom. And it's like, Dr. Doom is like cursing Marvel. Curses, like the same way in the comics, he's like, curses Richards. Joseph Culp has written this letter to say, curses Marvel, and say, like, Marvel, you better release that Roger Corman Fantastic Four and make it canon in the multiverse, or the curse will continue and you'll keep making bad Fantastic Four movies. It's kind of fun. Like, I mean, is it true? Do you think the Fantastic Four franchise is cursed? Joseph wrote this letter. He sent me an email. And I'm going to read a little bit of that letter on the air. And hopefully we get Joseph in here. I don't know when. I don't know when somebody can come on Geekscape anymore because we're booked. But it's a good problem to have because I love talking movies, video games, comic books, TV, pop culture. And I'm so pumped to talk to my dear friend, Fernando Pinto, who I've collaborated with many times over the last, Fernando, brace yourself, 18 years. But we've never met in person. But we're going to talk right now on Geekscape. So strap yourselves in. Let's do some Geekscaping. You're in the right spot. Here we go. Radical, awesome, whatever. Welcome to Geekscape. Let's get to it. My good friend Fernando Pinto is the writer and artist behind this brand new comic, Gun Punch. Do I call it a comic? Do I call it a graphic novel? I really don't know what format it was released in. I'm sorry, Fernando, a really bad friend. But let's have you in here to explain it. He is a amazing, fun, poppy comic book creator, and he's on Geekscape right now. Fernando, I love you, man.
Hey, man. Love you too, dude. And we're old.
We're old. We're straight up old. We're old, but we're gold. Why do you keep going to New York Comic Con instead of San Diego Comic Con, where Geekscape would gladly host you for the week and let you sign at the booth and give you exposure at our booth? And instead you go and you foot the bill for a Artist Alley booth at New York Comic Con, which is the best Artist Alley in any convention in the world. And we'd never meet because you go to New York Comic Con instead of San Diego, where we are a mainstay since 2010.
I wasn't prepared for the third degree on that. But I don't know, dude. I hang out friends from New York, and I usually have a place to stay there. So I started going and I've never been to San Diego. I'm a little scared of it.
Why?
No, I've heard it's so huge. I don't know. I just need to.
So you go to New York City?
Dude, like what it's smaller. It's smaller than San Diego Comic Con. That's what I've.
Oh, you're talking about the convention, not the actual city.
Yeah, of course.
No. I've been to both, and I think you're right in going to New York Comic Con because their Artist Alley is superior. It is the best Artist Alley of any convention ever. And Geekscape is, if you're listening to this and you're like, what convention do I go to get the autographs and meet the artists and really spend some time with comic book artists? In a pure sense, right? Like no celebrities, no distractions from the big studios. It is the Artist Alley at New York Comic Con. It's in a separate freaking room down a hallway, like downstairs. It's a clubhouse. It's so much fun. That being said, the behemoth, the cultural, the pop culture mecca, the nerd spring break that is San Diego Comic Con, first, I think you should experience. Second, if you're worried about putting your toe in the water and out of fear of falling into the deep end, you have friends as well. You have Mr. Matt Kelly, who'll throw you a life preserver. You've got me. I will be your guide. And you can always be a guest at San Diego Comic Con with us. That being said, don't do it this year because I think my baby is going to be born.
Yeah, dude, like, congratulations,
that
man.
Week or the week later. Thank you. Geekscapist, Matt Kelly and I are talking almost daily about the plan for San Diego Comic Con. There will be a Geekscape presence. There will be a Geekscape booth. I will tell you right now that they've moved to the Geekscape booth after the fiasco you may have heard about from last summer. If you listen to Geekscape, you know we had some problems with the convention and our neighbors. Because
you're not selling me on this, man.
Well, Jonathan thought it was a good idea, and he got encouragement from Heidi and Matt to go down to San Diego Comic Con with a microphone and start barking from the Geekscape booth into a microphone. And why not? All the other booths are much louder than us, and they show trailers and they go crazy and they show play Hans Zimmer music. So who's even going to worry about Jonathan with a microphone at the Geekscape booth? Well, our neighbors hated it, and San Diego Comic Con threatened us to like basically said, hey, we're going to turn this all off if you keep yelling into the microphone. And I mean, was I saying nice things? Maybe not.
Was it the volume or the content? What was the problem there?
I was told it was the volume.
Okay.
We lowered the volume, and then I was told it was the content. But listen, the strategy was bad. If you come and tell me it's the content, I'll fix the content. If you come and tell and you lie to me, if you lie to me and you tell me it's the volume when it's the content, then I'm just mad. And then the content gets worse. And listen, who's at fault? Who's really at fault? It's me. I thought I was like a nerd Howard Stern there. I thought I was the people's champion because I was promoting all the indie creators in our booth or in our row in our aisle against these giant corporations that have seemed to proliferate around us. And so I told them, I said, move us to the indie publishers area where I can champion all the independent creators in the area, not Artist Alley, just like where there's independent publishers and creators like Fanbase Press, our friends, Mega 64, Troma. This is really our neighborhood. That's where we belong. And so I'm happy to report right here on Geekscape that next summer, this coming summer, we're going to be near the indie publishers, and I will be able to promote all of them and yell as loud as I can because we're far away from the studios who are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to play their trailer for that Netflix thing you're not even going to watch. You know what I mean? Like,
it's just another square on your
nerd, I felt like I was the nerd Robin Hood.
You're just like the voice of the people.
I thought I was, but so this summer we're going down, and Matt is by design. Matt, we're gonna have like a throwaway, but like a booth that maybe is a little punk rock. And if I'm there for one day, 2 days, whatever, the booth is designed for Matt to be able to throw it in a dumpster on Sunday and get out, because I know I won't be there Sunday. Like my baby's scheduled to be early August, and the con is from the 25th to the 28th night, somewhere in there. So I'm not messing with that, man. I'm not messing with
that's,
it.
Yeah, that's probably the responsible thing to do.
Why don't you come down and just do like just do my job? Just come down and like yell at people.
Well,
on the
I can't this year because I got a scheduled trip on those dates. But Let's talk next year.
For real, Fernando. Like, it's insane that we've been collaborating for 18 years and we've never even hugged each other, homie.
Yeah, man.
We love comics.
Hold each other tight.
We love comics. We love punk rock.
Yeah, man.
We love everything. Like
all the good stuff, anyway.
Yeah, yeah. So tell me real quick about this Gun Punch comic that you have on Kickstarter. Because, you know, I almost canceled you because, you know, you told me you really wanted to come on Geeks here to talk Gun Punch. And then you go and you fund on Kickstarter in a day. So why do you even need to be here?
Because I wanted to hang out with you, man. I need an excuse. You never return my calls.
Yes. Come on now.
Basically, Gun Punch was a webcomic that I started right before the pandemic. And I worked on it through the pandemic and published like half of the story on my website in black and white. And now we're publishing the whole story in a graphic novel. It's going to be published by Rocket Ship Entertainment, the same guys that put out Outrage by Fabian Nicieza. The guys that put out Let's Play, they do all the legendary comics, like the Dune adaptation that's coming out in comic book form. They're printing it out.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Well, this Lila Sturgis comic that I just promoted, that they're going to be on the show next week. That's a legendary comics.
It's probably going to go through Rocket Ship then.
That's really cool. Okay, yeah, so Rocket Ship. Okay, I'm doing all the research. Like, you know that I'm working on an indie comic. Like, you've seen some of the artwork. And so I'm doing all the research for like, oh, who should distribute it? Who should publish it? Who should go out and do it? You know, like I'm just putting all the things together for this indie comic. And Geekscape, you're going to hear a lot about it as we get closer to summer. You'll be seeing artwork and things like that. But I've been in research phase for months. And Fernando, that sounds really exciting, man. Like,
yeah.
So I was going to make a joke that the Geekscapists can just go read the comic for free on the web because it's a web comic. But you say that the only half the story got published.
Exactly.
That's a nice hook. That's a nice hook. Okay.
Yeah, you can read about half of it in my website at fernandopinto.com. But it's also in black and white. And now we're doing the whole thing in color. And it's coming out in a nice, nice book. by the people at Rocket Ship. So, and it's a cool, like, if you like sci-fi, if you like action, it's a story about a guy named Evan who, after the worst day in his life, he loses his job, he loses his girlfriend, he goes to a bar and hooks up with a mysterious girl. And then the next day he wakes up with superpowers and being chosen to save Earth. The thing is, he sucks at it. So he gets beat up a lot. And also his salary as the savior of Earth is prorated from the amount of aliens that he kills a week. And he's not very good at it.
So he's a bit of a bounty hunter too. Or assassin or something.
Yes. He has to protect the Earth from this upcoming alien invasion. Or that's what he thinks anyway. There's some mysteries down the road.
Intrigue. But like, I like your style. I've always liked your style. Clearly, I love there's two pieces of your artwork on the, if you're watching this on YouTube, Twitch, or Facebook, there's a bit of your artwork twice on the screen. The Geekscape logo there in the corner is your artwork. Yes, Johnny Zapp. And then your Gun Punch artwork here, which, like, it reminds me of stuff like Geekscape, if you're listening, like Scud the Disposable Assassin and like stuff like that.
I get that,
like,
a lot.
Yeah. It's just like a really cool angular punk rock feel to your art that has just a ton of energy, and I've always been such a fan, man.
Oh, thank you, man. Thank you. Yeah, I'm more of the school of, like, comic books should be almost trying to be in motion. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of really cool art that's very static, and you see that a lot in comic books today. And I like cartoons, I like anime, I like action movement, so I try to put that into my work as much as I can.
You love the anime. You love all of it.
I love manga more than anime.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's a pacing thing. Because manga, you control the pacing. And anime tends to be slower at times. So that kind of, like, takes me out of it. But in manga, you control the pacing. And you get, like, that sensation of movement out of a static page.
Sure.
To me, that's, like, the best.
And so Akira Toriyama, who created Dragon Ball Z, he died this week, right?
Yeah.
Like, he was 68 years old. That's young. I know we joke about us being old, but like Akira Toriyama, like, so many people are upset about his death, as they should be. He is a legend in the manga world, right? Can you talk about that? Because I found Dragon Ball Z late, and I think here in the States, stuff like Toonami and like all that Cartoon Network stuff really, really exploded anime and manga here in the States, because Dragon Ball Z got played almost exclusively. It was Dragon Ball Z for a while. What was your exposure to Dragon Ball Z? And is that one of your favorites? I mean,
Akira Toriyama is one of my favorite mangaka, and he's like the first one that I knew by name. You know, I first read my first Dragon Ball manga I read when I was living in Spain when I was 13. So it got me, like, right at that age. And I think he's one of my biggest influences, to be honest. Like, that guy, I think there's Osamu Tezuka, the guy that did Astro Boy.
Yeah, who's the Japanese Walt Disney that some people
say. Walt Disney, right?
Right.
He creates what we understand as manga and anime. But then you have Akira Toriyama, which, to me, he's like the second in that monk Rushmore of mangaka, because that dude brought it, like, worldwide. Like, he had his sensibilities melded really well with Japanese people, but also with the rest of the world, you know. And especially, like, if you're ever in South America, dude, like, Dragon Ball is huge. Damn.
I've been to South America several times, and it's huge.
It is
absolutely big. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Spanish language dubs as well. That, like, I was a kid, like, a lot of that stuff, and remember on Geek Drum, the joke about like anime being robo titties? Because what's the name of that cartoon? It's like something Z. It's like
Mazinger
Z. Like, I think there's the female, like, robot.
Yeah, that shoots out of her
chest.
Shoots
missiles from her chest.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're the breasts. And I would watch that in Mexico dubbed. Not that Mexico is South America. It's still North America. But the Spanish language dubs of anime proliferated in Mexico and South America regularly. And on the US, like, all we had for so long was, like, here, you get to watch Akira and Ninja Scroll. Like, that's all we
get. And that's not the most accessible stuff to watch.
I'm a kid, right? Like, as a kid, we're not watching that. We'd rather watch the girl with the missile chest. So I do get that South America and in Mexico and places like that had those Spanish language dubs, and those were on TV. And then, of course, the newsstands still carry comics. They still carry comics today, and that's a really healthy culture
for discovering that stuff. For whatever newsstand distribution we still have, you can still find comics there. But for years, it was everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think Toriyama's work had humor, had action, had heart. You know, the characters were likable. His designs were amazing. The way he dressed his characters is really, like, cool looking, you know? So, I don't know, man. It's a great loss. And, I mean, it happens to a lot of mangaka that they die young because the work schedule is so rigorous.
Is that right?
Yeah, dude. The Berserker guy died last year, and it was the same thing. He was, like, 54, 55.
Jesus.
And they worked themselves to death.
Did you see that Justin Chatwin came out and apologized for the 2007, 8, or 9 Dragon Ball movie? Yeah. Like, it's like, dude, that ain't on you, man. Like,
no, there's a lot of people there. Yeah, that was not a good
movie. He played Goku in the live-action American movie. Speaking of live-action, you know, I know it's not strict manga. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, I mean, some people consider it anime, but I hinted in the intro to the last episode, but Heidi and I got through all 8 episodes of the live action Avatar: The Last Airbender that Netflix did. Have you been watching? Did you watch that?
No, I just got into the cartoon like a month ago. I'm watching it now.
Oh my god, you're where Heidi is on the cartoon then, because
dude, I'm finishing the second season.
So I turned on this live action and I was like, okay, I had heard criticism of it in the days leading up to my ability to see it. So it had been out a few days before I could see the live action Avatar. And I'd heard the criticisms. And as I start watching this first episode, I think you'll agree with me that the animated version is so much fun. And even though it has some really serious themes and is really well written and has some heavy storytelling in it, the majority of it is fun and light and still predominantly a kid's show. And the characters are fun. They're silly at times, even though that there's a lot of like Earth saving, you know, going on and there's high stakes. It's still very much a silly, fun show at times. Almost immediately on this Netflix version, you're going to be missing that stuff. It is incredibly dark and serious. And you even see the Fire Nation people like lighting people up on screen, like straight up blasting them into flames. And you have to be ready for that because it's almost like they took it in a very super serious way, even though the origins of it are a kid's show. And I found myself really missing that tone of a kid's show, especially like in a character like Sokka, who's a total ham. Yeah. And, you know, that's the best way to describe him really, is a ham. Here, he's pretty serious. And it was something I couldn't shake. First off, it's there all 8 episodes, Geekscape. And the series got renewed for the final 2 seasons. It's a 3-season storyline, like in the cartoon. And I'm glad they're not turning it into like The Hobbit in the 5 armies or whatever, right? So I finally had to like... First off, I think some parts of it, including Aang and some of the child actors, they lighten up a little bit as it goes. But if you watch the live action Netflix Avatar, knowing that they have taken the kids' fun and sometimes silliness of the animated series and turned it into, they've kind of grown up with us and turned it into a more adult, very awesome action choreography driven dramatic version, I think you can be happy that both exist, because having watched all 8 episodes, not only does it get better over the season, especially with like a character like Uncle Iroh, and that relationship starts to get really nice and the actors are really good. I think you'll find yourself at the end of the 8 episodes having liked that you saw some of your favorite scenes from season 1 animated in live action. There's some great visuals. There's some really awesome fight choreography, and the set pieces are not compromised, especially like at the end of that first season. You see some major battles between the Water Tribe of the North and the Fire Nation, and they mm-hmm. don't compromise this stuff. And it feels like some really kick-ass greatest hits. And if you accept that the Netflix version of Avatar: Last Airbender grew up with its audience, ask yourself if you think it would be awkward for a live action version to have the silliness and cartoonishness at times of the animated version.
Because if you like, the counterpoint of that would be the One Piece adaptation, which kept all that humor and stuff. You know what I mean? So,
yeah, and I did enjoy that as well, but I enjoyed it not having seen One Piece because holy crap, 300 plus episodes. Oh my God.
No.
I'm sorry. It may not be in my lifetime. I'm already old.
All right. No, it's like 1,000 episodes, dude.
Don't even. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. I can't even start.
I've read some of the manga, but no.
Oh my God. How great is that we live in an age where we can get a live action version of something that we've enjoyed in manga and anime and just live with that.
Yeah, dude, it's a good time to be a geek, but also we've gotten so complacent that
it's
a lot of people online would be like, oh, it's not exactly how I remember it, so this show sucks. You know what I mean?
I'm glad I have a lot of that stuff. With the Avatar Last Airbender thing, I'm so glad I have both, especially since the live action was Heidi's first introduction to that world. And I've never seen her sit down to watch a cartoon anything. And I look up one day after having seen the live action, and she is starting the animated series. And she is watching it. And she's recognizing characters that were interpreted in the live action. And I'm like, oh my goodness, we are turning her into a little bit of an anime nerd. And I will take responsibility for it because I showed her a lot of the Miyazaki stuff, which is a nice gateway drug. And congrats to Hayao Miyazaki for winning an Oscar.
He doesn't care.
He's just making stuff. He doesn't care. But also, how cool is it that Godzilla won?
That's so his cool. First Oscar. Yeah, dude. And they played the music, you know, when the Godzilla music. And all
did you ever think you'd see the day? I was like, oh, that's the Oscar movie that I watched was the Godzilla.
No. I don't think anybody did.
I love the Godzilla movie. And again, if you're a Godzilla fan and you're listening to Geekscape for the first time, or you're just catching up, or you wanted to jump in because it's comics, go back one episode and hear Chris Black talk about adapting the legendary MonsterVerse into a TV show for Apple with that Monarch legacy of monsters. He's the showrunner on that one. And I did follow up with Chris and I said, let's get Matt Fraction on the show to talk comics and Godzilla as well. So Geekscapes, we're working overtime for you guys here. What else? It's speaking of animated, like this X-Men 97, I've been watching it. Like it's my, no offense to anybody involved.
I'm so afraid.
No offense to anybody involved with X-Men animated and who loves it back in the day. But when I have my insomnia bouts at like midnight, 2 a.m., 3 a.m., I'll go watch like one or two episodes and try and work myself back to sleep. And so that's like my current insomnia catch up. I'm excited for the X-Men 97 stuff.
When you watch the old ones, do they hold up? Because I'm so scared of going back and watching them.
Okay, so first off, so X-Men Animated on Fox released the same year as Batman the Animated and didn't have the budget. And you can just tell because the Batman Animated 90s series is so clean and so badass and is beautiful. And the Fox thing, you got to remember, you probably weren't born, Fernando, but Geekscape is in 92, 93. I mean, I just remember first encountering an animated X-Men probably in 89 when I'm 10 or 11 years old, 90.
And it was like a special, right? Like Pride of the X-Men or something?
Well, Pride of the X-Men was a $300,000 pilot put on by paid for by Marvel Entertainment. It was a subsidiary of Marvel Comics, and they wanted to do things like start testing this animated stuff. Obviously, things like Ninja Turtles was popular, Transformers. I mean, in a way, you got to thank Ronald Reagan for just lifting all the FCC regulations on selling action figures to kids, because 80s cartoons were just commercials for action figures for kids. And you never would have gotten that earlier in the U.S. history because the FCC wouldn't have allowed it. So by the time the 87 rolls around and you start to have the popularity of the X-Men and the Teen Titans and stuff there in the comic page with the Marv Wolfman stuff, with the Chris Claremont stuff, you know, and obviously you have some iterations of Spider-Man live action, and you've seen the Hulk live action, this and that. Marvel said, let's do an X-Men pilot for animation, but they paid for it themselves. It was $300,000, which is pretty, if you're going to get into the game, that's hard, right? There's a great book on this that's out right now, and Geekscape is Google it. I don't know the name of it, but there's a brand new handsome book that came out about the history of X-Men, the animated series in the 90s. The woman who ran that project went and led Fox Animation Saturday mornings, right? Like Fox was really started with The Simpsons and what Married with Children and stuff like that. But like they're in their nascency in 92, 93. Like they've only been a network in the US for a few years. They definitely don't have a Saturday morning lineup. They may not have a justifiable like risk for a Saturday morning lineup, but she was the woman who was in charge of Pride of the X-Men, and she brought it to Fox and she fought for it, and it got canceled a few times. They changed the animation styles. A lot of this is coming off of my knowledge from having heard the Rob Liefeld podcast, which does a much better job of this. But Rob said when this thing launched, they had just formed Image Comics, and Jim left Marvel. Jim Lee was the artist on X-Men, and they left Marvel and they started Image Comics, and an actual company like message came from like either Fox or from really Marvel, and was like, hey, none of the character designs can be Jim Lee style, like, which was the popular designs and the ones that were used in the show ultimately.
Yeah.
But suddenly the Fox animators received a notice that said, you cannot use the Jim Lee style because Jim left us. He went and formed Image. Da 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 da. And if you make that style popular and people go back and discover the X-Men as Jim Lee drew them, they will go to Image and read the Jim Lee stuff, the Wildcats stuff, and all that stuff. And now Jim Lee is our competition. So there was a company memo that said, you need to change the styles from, you cannot have the styles in the form that they were in the very popular, I think, highest selling all time X-Men book.
Yep. 8.5 million, I think.
8.5 million. Like, how disastrous would that have been if that company memo had been successful? Read this book, because what ended up happening was these Fox animators were like, oh my God, they're going to kill us because we have to use these Jim Lee designs. They nerfed it in the same way that Martin Scorsese will direct like an overly violent scene, knowing he never intended to keep it, that the studio will see the overly violent scene and be like, you have to cut that scene. It's too violent. And overlook the scene he did intend to keep that was violent.
Right.
The animators were like, okay, we'll give you new designs. And they nerfed these designs. They look like crap. Like they're like the silliest, stupidest designs for the X-Men ever. And at that point, when everybody saw the designs that they proposed, were like, how about this? They were like, oh, let's go back to the designs. And then you and you ended up with that Jim Lee design. That being said, well, like, it holds up, you know. It's just cool to rewatch them. The animation is a lot rough. You can tell it's low budget in the first season, but they're introducing some really awesome characters. I mean, they introduced Cable so aggressively early.
Yeah, and I remember that.
And Gambit, I was there in 91, 92. Like, Gambit was barely on the X-Men, on the comics page by the time he premiered in the cartoon. Like, it was crazy. It was crazy. I was like, oh, dude, this is a brand new X-Men and he's already in the cartoon. Okay, let's roll with this, dude. And like, they introduced Sabretooth in like the first, second, third episode. And he has like this Weapon X flashback, like this weird Professor X goes into his brain.
And all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, Sabretooth he's trying to fight Xavier, right? Xavier's like, calm down. Da, da, da. And he has these psychic flashes. There's a flash of Deadpool.
Oh, there's
there's a flash of Deadpool. There's a flash of Maverick. Like the Weapon X stuff is in like the second or third episode that's of so X-Men cool. animated series. That's and that's so like 1992, cool. 3 when those characters were barely even on the comics page by that point. Those guys like Larry Houston were badasses when it came to that X-Men animated series. They went full on. Like season 3 is like full on like Mr. Sinister or some shit. Like that's awesome. And Sinister wasn't introduced until like 89, 90 for the Silvestri stuff with Inferno. Like,
yep.
It's awesome.
I mean, like that cartoon for me, that was my introduction to superhero comics. That's why I started reading comics.
You gotta
watch it. I guess I do, but I'm so scared, man. I saw the trailer for the new series and it looks great.
It's crisp.
You can tell that the animation and the style of drawing has changed. So I'm like, okay, am I gonna still like the old one? I don't know, but I'll check it out just based on your review right now.
It's such a celebration of the X-Men. I think you got to go. I think you got to do it. I mean, right. I'll tell you what, though, like Spider-Man and his amazing friends, like I'll throw that all in the background. And it's it's choppy, homie. Like it is the old Fantastic Four cartoon where they took out Johnny Storm and replaced him with Herbie because they were afraid kids were going to be lighting their asses on fire. Like,
well, they even have those old ones where it would be just like a panel from the comic and like a mouth moving.
That stuff was the Electric Factory. That cartoon, that series, Electric Factory. That's where the Spider-Man theme song came from. So that, like, I'll watch that stuff. Yo, Across the Spider-Verse proved it's all canon,
dude. Oh, yes.
I got to tell you. That being said, the big news in the X-Men animated was that like Marvel fired the creator for the X-Men 97.
I heard a reason for that.
What did you hear was the reason that he was fired? Because he scraped his Instagram. Which made me go, okay, Disney, they fire showrunners sometimes like budgets, stockholders, different company edicts, but they already have two seasons down. You're going to get two seasons and they fire the showrunner. And what made me go, well, that's weird. Scraped his Instagram.
I heard it was OnlyFans related.
I heard the same thing.
Okay.
What could have possibly been on that OnlyFans?
I don't know. It was a different design for Wolverine that he was using, I guess.
Get out of here with that.
I don't know.
Different mutant power. Oh, no.
No, dude.
Can't nothing stop the Juggernaut. No. What was on that industry? What was on that OnlyFans?
Not an optic blast.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, listen, Fernando, I'm being sincere with you. I've never been on OnlyFans in my life. I get it though. I get that people make money. Did you hear that the girl from The Sopranos said that it saved her house?
Oh, yeah, she paid her house.
She paid her house. Like she was having trouble. Like we've barely seen her in anything since The Sopranos. She was in Joey. She was in Joey, and now she like claims that OnlyFans saved her house. Like I get it. Yeah. And I don't do that whole like sex worker shame or this and that. But like, dude had a OnlyFans, and it's like. But you're also working for Disney, and Disney puts out kid stuff. Like, I don't know, man.
He's doing it for the love of the game, you know?
I wanted to make friends.
Yeah, dude.
My optic blast. Oh, no. I heard the same thing in Geekscape. Yeah. I think that's rumor as far as you and I are concerned. Like, I wouldn't. But that being said, we got ourselves some controversy on the brand new X-Men 97, but I'm definitely going to watch it. It looks slick.
Oh, definitely,
yeah. I mean, I was like, in some of those promo pieces, like Jean Grey is pregnant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, maybe that was why.
I mean, it could, but like,
no, it picks up supposedly where 97 left off with.
Yeah. But it, to make it as far as like, we're seeing it, like a lot of people saw that and that doesn't get through. I wouldn't think. Not with a company like
this. Is this where I find out you have an OnlyFans, Fernando?
No. Okay. I can't.
Way to get a boy's hopes up.
I'm sorry?
Way to get a boy's hopes up.
Well, I can send you some pics if you want. Like, I'll just email it to you.
We've known each other 19 years. Yeah. Now you proposed this?
Should have done it in 2007.
Yeah, bro, because now it's older fans.
Older fans, yeah. It's like everything looked better back then.
Which is so appropriate because obviously like our bands like Blink-182 and Green Day are all going out and doing like, dude, Green Day is performing the Dookie and American Idiot in full on concert like globally, right? NoFX is breaking up after this year. Sum 41 is breaking up after this album is coming up. It sounds good too. I like this stuff.
Yeah,
Blink 182 got back together. And
dude, I'm seeing Blink on Saturday.
Really? That's so cool. Where are you living at? You're in Chile.
In Chile, They're playing Lollapalooza here.
That's so great. And I'm excited for you. That being said, like, bro, we're old and our music's old, but we love it.
Yep.
We bonded over comics. I think we stayed together with the music and we love it so much. Dude,
I'm wearing an Alkaline Trio shirt, man.
I love the Alkaline Trio.
favorite band of all time.
I love that you said that. That's really awesome. Yeah. I saw Matt Skiba. I have his phone number, and I've been too scared to invite him on Geekscape, and it's been like 10 years.
Dude.
Because he was at the Swingers restaurant in Hollywood, and I just kind of stopped and was like, hey, Matt, I helped you on one of your music videos. My friend Piper Ferguson directed it. I was there. Like, I remember we had a good... And he goes, yeah. I was like, I'd love to have you on Geekscape. I took his number. The first time I met Matt Skiba was I had approached him about playing our radio show in college. Okay. In the summer of 99, I lived in New York, and they were opening for the International Noise Conspiracy in concert. And he invited me to the Knitting Factory back when it was in Manhattan. And I remember I lived in one of the worst fucking parts of Brooklyn. And it was scary as hell. Like, one guy tried to jump me one time coming home one night. And I remember going to the Knitting Factory to see Alkaline Trio, first time I saw them live, and they weren't headlining. It was the International Noise Conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing the Alkaline Trio and being like, oh, that's awesome. And going up to Matt afterwards and Dan and be like, oh, that was so great. And I really want to get you in the studio when you get to Philly to like record you guys for our radio show, which we recorded some amazing bands like Newfound Glory, Midtown, The Bouncing Souls, etc. And I, first off, we have all that recording too. And we found a Blink-182 interview that I did in 99 with Kevin, where it sounds like our balls hadn't dropped.
Were they still with Scott? No, it's 99.
No. So it was Travis. Travis is in it. And Enema of the State had just come out like a month or two earlier. And I can put that on the feed. Like if you guys want, I can release my college radio interviews.
Send it to me if you don't want to put it up.
For sure.
I want to hear it.
I remember we were dressed as Mexican wrestlers, and Travis saw us dressed as Mexican wrestlers when he walked into the room to do the interview. And Mark and Tom were like, yeah, we're down. Travis walked in, saw Kevin and I dressed as Mexican wrestlers, and goes, yeah, you guys do that one without me. like, no, I'm not doing this weird shit. Yeah,
that sounds accurate.
So Matt Skiba tells me, he's like, yes, like, I want to do your radio show. It never ended up happening, but he's like, you got to stay for International Noise Conspiracy or you're an idiot. He said those exact words. If you leave during International Noise Conspiracy, you're an idiot. At this point, it's like 11 o'clock at night. They're probably gonna go on for an hour. I'm thinking about walking. Thinking about go through the projects in Brooklyn at like 1 o'clock in the morning and getting myself fucking stabbed.
Yeah, no kidneys for you, my friend.
Daniel Johnson is in the comments on YouTube and he says release it. Dude, yeah, I'll release the, you know what? I'll find a way to like put some context to the interviews and I'll release the interviews. The music obviously I can't release and like saves the day or you're released. Theirs as the second, if you get the Through Being Cool double album 20th anniversary, oh my god, it's 20th anniversary. The second album, the second LP in that double album is the recording that we did for the radio show and they mastered it. It's awesome. You can hear me go like woo or something, I think. I don't know. but yeah, dude, I felt bad. So I saw Matt Skiba a few years ago in Swingers here in Hollywood. And I explained, and he's like, hey, let me give you a number. I've never,
dude.
I'm scared, man. Bro. But maybe I just ask him to come on Geekscape and be like, fuck it.
I would, like, I don't know if I would be able to talk. I'd be too much of a fanboy.
Really?
I love, like, his lyrics, man. Like, it's amazing.
I love the Alkaline Trio. Love them. Yeah, we got to talk about this Dune 2.
I haven't seen it yet.
I'm not going to spoil it for you. Okay. But they did previews here in the States like a week before Dune Part 2. And I liked Dune Part 1. I thought it was really cool. Awesome. Like, what an impressive movie. I read this book probably late middle school, early high school. And by the second book, I was like, is this getting... I don't know.
It's like, pretty weird.
Like, yeah, that is... It's like, kid turns into a fucking worm. like, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't know about this. But I still enjoyed that first book, and obviously I love the Lynch movie for fun. I like the miniseries. You know, I consider myself a Dune fan, and I think this Denis Villeneuve thing, I think he's incredible, and he's the dude to make it. Right. But when I went to see Dune 2, I gotta tell you, like, everybody was raving about it because they went to the sneak previews, and I found it kind of flat. Like, you're gonna kill me for saying that, but
I'm not.
I think about the first one, and I think about this one, and I'll just tell you, as a storyteller, when everything is important, like when you try to make everything important, at the end of the day, nothing's important. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, I feel like I came out of there being like, oh my God, every moment was important. Every fight was epic. Yeah. Everything was pregnant with life or death and the saving of the people and Paul's journey and his destiny as a savior. And there was so much of that that I was like, but what about some humor? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, that was, I think the first one is an amazing movie, but
those movies are so impressive. Well. They're incredible. Exactly.
They're amazing. Amazing. But I just like the whole, everything is so serious and it feels cold to me. You know what I mean? Like even in the cold, most serious moments in life, there's always a little bit of humor, a little bit of lightness, you know?
And we all know that Star Wars is based on Dune, heavily inspired by Dune, but it really makes you appreciate a character, an audience surrogate, like Han Solo, who can be like, yeah, it's a lot of crazy shit. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, like what the hell is going on?
Like, it almost needs a character. And I think a Josh Brolin character would have been okay, but he's in the midst of it. And he does feel like a bit of a breath of fresh air when he shows up in the second movie. I was like, yeah, no, and there's not a lot of peaks and valleys in this stuff. And it really wore me out. And at the risk of spoiling one thing, like,
go for it.
They want to criticize a character like Rey for being a Mary Sue and like being like so powerful from the drop. But like that is very much educated by a character like Paul Atreides, who is absolutely like some Jesus surrogate white savior. Definitely. Like from the start, he's awesome at everything. Yeah. So one of the scenes that for me took the legs out of it, not that I wasn't completely blown away by performances.
It's amazing.
There is a scene where they're testing him, right? As like the Freemen are testing him and they're going to send him out of the desert and people do not come back. Like you will not come back. There's like all these poisonous, horrible things in the desert that will kill you beyond just the worms, right? Like he's listing like scorpions and like ROUSs and stuff like that. That was a joke. Rodents of unusual size, remember? Okay, you get it. So they're naming all the things in the desert that will kill him and how he has to go through the desert. And if he returns, then he can write. So he starts, they're seriously like, you're going to fucking die. And you see him leave on his quest. And Zendaya's like, good luck. Don't die. Right? Like, you're like, and I'm like, oh, and like, I got my Dune bucket. I'm like hyped. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to see some shit now. This is going to be badass.
You got the bucket? You got the bucket.
I'm not going to talk about that in a public forum. No, okay.
I did ask for extra butter. I
did not get the bucket. So I'm like super stoked to see this sequence.
Okay.
And he goes off into the desert. Cut to him like later, like just with the Freeman, like chilling. And I'm like,
everything worked out, guys.
I guess he survived that really cool sequence you guys promised us. You just cut to him like. Right. Setting up a moisturizer with Zendaya. I was honestly yeah. like, guys,
I just got the bucket, guys.
You had me primed. You had the bucket in place. I was ready, and you yanked me.
Yeah, dude.
And so I felt like that was indicative, to me. That's like you guys are shoving a lot into this, and there's not enough like character proving moments.
Yeah, it's all spectacle. And like
I don't want to say that because that sounds like there's no substance.
Okay.
That makes sense. Like spectacle to me feels hollow. Sense. I think it has substance. I think there's some really beautiful art in this movie, but peaks and valleys, like what are the highs and lows? Where are moments where an audience has to find their way into a story? Where are the moments where an audience can find their way into the story? Because if everything is life and death impressive beyond the stars and tantamount, how does the person who's just like, oh shit, I got to do laundry after this movie's over.
Yes.
Where do they find themselves in relation to things that are at that heavy of odds? And again, thank God for Han Solo in a Star Wars movie as the audience surrogate to say like, laser swords and wizardry, like I've been from one side of the galaxy to the other and you can't fucking convince me any of that shit, so that when you convince Han Solo in the Star Wars, when you convince Han Solo, you're convincing the audience. And if you don't have somebody going on that journey with the audience, I feel like you might end up with an experience like this where it's like, oh, where are we again? Is it, I guess he survived the desert.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to see it on the big screen.
As you should.
Because that's how you have to see it. But I don't know, like the first one pissed me off that it didn't end.
Whoa. Piss you off.
Yeah, dude, because it's 3 hours of a movie. And,
okay.
And Zendaya says, this is only the beginning, and it ends.
Okay.
And I'm like...
But you knew there was a second movie coming, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh, shit. What kind of Chilean...
I watched the movie, and it said part one, and I was like,
oh,
what the hell?
What kind of Chilean marketing fucking shit did
Warner Bros.? Everything said Dune. Nothing said Dune part one.
Bro! Oh, I'm sorry. Geekscape bailed you because we did not tell you in advance that, yes, there's two parts. I knew going into part one there was part two.
I didn't know.
Part two was dependent on the success of part one, which is why it didn't come like within the year.
Right.
They filmed it after the success of part one for sure. But like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, homie. Thumbs up on that. Like, I'm really sorry. No, well, I run a thing called Geekscape.
Okay.
Sometimes I do a podcast where we talk news and reviews. That news. Did not enter your
no.
Not, some of not that news either. Could have been like, hey, they're doing a two-part Dune.
Which instead. Makes sense. I mean, it's a huge saga, but huge. I thought like it'll finish, like it'll give me an arc, and I don't feel like I got an arc.
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I feel like that's all a failing right. on my part. When you see me in San Diego Comic-Con in 8 years, you can slap me in the face.
I will.
I'll be a father then. So don't do it in front of my daughter, please.
Okay. I'll try not to. I'll make her look the other way.
Okay, be like, sweetie, you're going to want to turn around for this.
Yeah.
You motherfucker, why did you tell me that the dude was in two parts? Starts like spewing me in Spanish, start yelling at stuff, and I'll understand what you're saying if you say it in Spanish. And hopefully she will too.
We got to work on that.
I'll teach my girl Spanish. So what are you reading, man, as we talk comics? Like,
what am I reading? Yeah. I've been reading some stuff lately. I read the first volume of Human Target, which got collected a little... That was great. It's so good, man. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. I got in because of the artwork. Greg Smallwood is amazing.
Yeah.
But the story was so good. And the cliffhanger at the end of the first volume was like, oh, okay. Do you know if these Black Label books are in continuity for DC or?
No, I don't believe they are. Warner Brothers, we're going to have this discussion. Because James Gunn came out this week and he said that they're shooting the second season of the John Cena thing.
Peacemaker.
Peacemaker. Yeah. And he says, okay, we're shooting Peacemaker season two concurrently with his Superman film. Now only labeled Superman. I'm so stoked for both because I loved Peacemaker. I love James.
Yeah, Peacemaker was great.
And I can't wait to see him do a really hopeful, awesome Superman. So I'm really excited. He also said, though, that this one is in continuity with his Gods and Monsters new DC, universe, but that season one was not in canon. Yeah.
Huh.
And
so are they restarting it?
I don't know. I don't know.
Is he going to have to fight his dad again?
Eagly's going to have to. I don't know. Here's the thing. Like, I know that the Snyderverse characters did it. Spoiler, if you haven't seen Peacemaker, you should have. But I know that there's like cameos of like some of the Snyderverse characters at the end of
the ones they could get that day.
It was so great. Yeah. And here's a cool thing about it. It was shot by the Guardians of the Galaxy 3 crew.
Yeah.
Like that was so fucking cool. I love that.
Yeah.
But in saying here's the thing, Geekscape, is because some people started texting me like, what does this mean? It's season two of a show, but the first season is in continuity. Like, I don't know what's happening. And here's the rule. Okay, Geekscape, is forget what the giant corporations are telling you about what's canon and what's not canon, because we absolutely got Tim Burton's Bruce Wayne back over the summer in the Flash movie. We absolutely, across the universe, the Spider-Verse, we absolutely got several live action nods to the Spider-Man films. We got the Electric Factory Spider-Man in there. In No Way Home, we got the stuff going on. Like, we for sure are living in a multiverse, and I don't think James Gunn in the new DC... And James Gunn knows this. He's a fanboy like us. But, like, a new DC universe can't escape that. And they're going to have beats from that first season. They'll have residents in this second season because they're the same characters. And yeah. There's a Waller show. And Amanda Waller was in a lot of the Snyderverse. And she's now going to be in the James Gunn verse and all that stuff. And I think that's great.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's all a multiverse. And like clearly there was an Aquaman 2 after the Flash movie. And the end credit kind of scene has the Momoa Aquaman in it. But it also has a remade Bruce Wayne in it with the George Clooney. It all counts. Here's the thing, Geekscape, is when you talk about the multiverse, you think it all counts. It's all some shift of the universe that you knew possibly shifted into a new universe. Because here's the thing, the third Warner Brothers Batman movie after the Keaton movies had Val Kilmer in it. It's still the same Bruce Wayne. The next one had Clooney. Still the same Bruce Wayne. All right, that was those four movies that they made in the 90s with Batman, 89, early to the 90s. Those are supposed to be the same Bruce Wayne. So when you have that same Bruce Wayne show up in the same Flash movie and one of them is played by Michael Keaton and one of them is played by George Clooney, it kind of makes your head scratch. The multiverse is all a shift in a shading of each other. Like, it all counts. If that's your favorite movie, if you went to Black Adam and you're like, fuck yeah, I want to see more of this Black Adam movie, it counts. I know you didn't say that, you jerk.
I didn't say anything. I'm just saying I did see Black Adam.
You saw it, right?
Yeah, I saw it with that Black little Adam. Bart Simpson kid.
Yeah. No, it's T2 when he's like skateboarding down the clotheslines. Yeah. It's tight.
That movie was not good, dude.
Yeah, don't be rude. That being said, I
like Pierce Brosnan was awesome.
Great. Dude, Dr. Fate was sick. Dr. Yeah, Fate, Hawkman.
I want to see that
JSA
movie.
JSA. Yeah, exactly. And what I'm telling you is you can get it. And like, what DC is doing right, what Warner Brothers is doing right, is that you got to come out bold with this brand new DC cinematic universe. You got to come out, you got to go all in. And then the stuff that you think worked, like some of the stuff comes back. Cause like people cheered when they saw Andrew Garfield in No Way Home. He was the best part of that movie for me. And I love everything in that movie, but Andrew Garfield from two Spider-Man movies, which I kind of bemoaned, I loved him. Which brings us to, you know what? Don't do that to me on my show. Which brings me to our good friend. Maybe we close with this. My good friend, Joseph Culp, who played Dr. Doom in the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie that most of y'all haven't even seen. You can watch it actually on YouTube. Is it good? Well, it was made for $1 million. That being said, is it tonally true to Stan Lee and Jack Kirby? Yes. I want to tell you real fast, Geekscapist, that my friend Carl Cierfolio, who put together the Fantastic Four reunion episode several years ago that had the cast of the Fantastic Four, Carl is in Vegas and his stunt driving and stunt career, he was Bluntman. He went through the wall as Bluntman in Mallrats. He was Kevin Smith's stunt double for that. His stunt career is caught up with him and his body is having difficulties. So if you go to GoFundMe and you look for Carl Cierfolio, he is his body is busted and he's having trouble. So search GoFundMe for his fund. What do you call that? Thing and help him out because it's insane to see somebody who drove cars for Christopher Nolan in Dark Knight and in the movie Drive with Ryan Gosling and did a million stunts and wore the Thing costume in Roger Corman's Fantastic Four. It was just such a physical guy. It's really humbling to see him have difficulties in like drinking out of a straw while he's like trying to get his mobility back in a hospital bed. That being said, like I was not expecting Joseph Culp to like email me and say, hey, I have this letter and it's a couple of websites have picked up on it. And it basically says, I'm going to read this, not all the letter, but the curse of the Fantastic Four, why Marvel's Fantastic Four film franchise has never succeeded and how to fix it by Joseph Culp, the first live action Dr. Doom. And the letter goes, this is an open letter to Marvel Studios. Dear Marvel Studios, I'll just read you the first lines. The reason why the last three film versions of Marvel's Fantastic Four have never been as successful as hoped is because the first 1994 film version has never been officially released or acknowledged. After 30 years, the now historic and glaring omission in the film canon remains a blind spot and has become a blockage in the energetic system of Marvel's film franchise lineage. The blind spot has far-reaching deleterious that is such a doom word effects. Deleterious effects. It is literally deleted the goodwill. Deleterious. The 1994 film, The Fantastic Four, which was produced by Roger Corman for New Constantine Films in order to have New Constantine hold the franchise and hold the rights. And let me tell you, when the Marvel version of Fantastic Four with Pedro Pascal comes out, there will be a New Constantine Films logo in front of it. It was held back from release, is now one of the biggest cult films of all time. The film was shelved and rumored to have been destroyed, yet for over 30 years, the fan base grew into the millions. And yes, I mean, there's some amazing stuff like Doomed, the documentary. You can go back in the Geekscape feed. But he then goes and starts arguing his points. The Fantastic Four 94 is better than most. Yes, love it. It's a pretty pure movie. Is the Fantastic Four franchise cursed? He says that there is a systemic curse. The three officially released film versions of Marvel's Fantastic Four, 2005, 2007, 2015, have never been entirely successful creatively, commercially, or with the fans because they bear the burden of a systemic curse. It's energetic in nature and can be understood through basic systemic constellation theory. I'm not too up on constellation theory, but, you know, Dr. Doom does work with the arcane, so maybe this is what we're talking about. He then goes on and says, the solution to the blind spot, light must be shed, how to lift the Fantastic Four curse. Step one, officially release the film. Which is like, okay, I think fans would love that. Release the film, put it on Disney Plus. Yeah. Release the film, let's see it. It's interesting. Step two, here's where Marvel's going to be like, oh, hey, hold on. Lifting the curse through the multiverse. Oh boy. Include Fantastic Four 94 and Marvel's upcoming Fantastic Four film franchise through creative inclusion. Now that Marvel has eagerly embraced the concept of the multiverse and has applied it in films such as Doctor Strange 2, Madness of the Multiverse, or the Multiverse of Madness, but Joe's Let My Man Cook. And Spider-Man No Way Home, the possibilities for lifting the F4 curse are wide open. Here we go. Kevin Feige now includes all of Marvel's past work as canon. So, like, honestly, he's arguing, like, why not this? Yeah. But he says Marvel should allow the release of the heretofore silenced 1994 Fantastic Four and find a creative way to include the first film in the multiverse of the newest one. If this happens, the publicity, social media, and box office will explode for the benefits of your studio, the progenitors, the fans, and the legacy of one of the very best and enduring comics Marvel ever created. Quote, in quotes, here's to the future, my friend, Dr. Doom and the Fantastic Four. Respectfully, Joseph Culp and the original Fantastic Four 94 family. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, man.
Let's do it.
Yeah, why not?
Put that shit out there. Dude? I'm down. Yeah. I liked Joseph Culp. I liked having him on Geekscape. And I loved Geekscape being like one of the first cast reunions. But why not? Like I said about the, I can't like harp on Warner Brothers.
They put out Inhumans, man. Let's put out this.
And I've also heard that like Eternals isn't going to get a sequel.
It's not surprising.
Yeah. Would I love to make an Eternals movie? Like I think all that Jack Kirby stuff is so awesome. I'd love to do it.
It's great.
I love it.
I think Eternals should have been a series though.
I hear you. Well, man. Fernando, we've talked a lot of geek stuff, man.
We have.
I promised all the geek talk that can fit under your little noggin,
dude.
Geekscapist, and we did it. Fernando, what are some of the stretch goals on this gun punch?
Some of the stretch goals: you can get bigger stickers, you can get more pins, and if of course you have all the other stuff, you have print sets. You can get the hardcover, you can get the softcover, you can get digital. Edition. You can get some bookmarks if we reach a certain stretch goal. There's a bunch of stuff that you can get through the Gun Punch Kickstarter. You can get to it through my website, fernandopintoart.com, or just search for Gun Punch on Kickstarter and it'll get you right there. We're already funded, but we're trying to get to those stretch goals to like get it to as many people as we can.
I'm proud of you, dude.
Thank you, dude. Proud of you as well.
Love you, dude, man. I'm so glad you had come on Geekscape. You know, the artist for my current comic that Geekscape is to learn about in the coming months, it's also Chilean.
You told me about that.
You people are wonderful.
I know.
Yeah, I can, if he doesn't understand something that I write, I can just say it in Spanish or put it in Spanish, and it's all working its way out.
See, there you go.
Excited to share that with the world. Fernando, thanks, man. FernandoPinto.com, is that correct?
Yep. FernandoPintoArt.com. And you can get to all my
art.
Sites. FernandoPintoArt.com.
Okay. And Geekscape is, you know how to find us. Geekscape.net. We're on all the social media as Geekscape. I'm Jonathan at Geekscape.net. If you want to shoot me an email and be like, hey, I hear what you're saying, man, but I disagree with you respectfully. We got some Geekscapes coming, man. Next week, we're talking more comics. Week after that, I guess we got some movies, video games, comics, TV. I love this stuff. Fernando, good luck with the rest of the Kickstarter. I'm going to go and donate this week. And thank you, dude. Love you
so
much.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
Always, always, always good for a conversation. And here is Matt Skiba's phone number. Here we go. You ready? Okay. It is area code. Right? Are you writing this down?
I'm writing it down.
Uh-huh. And then
you're listening to the Geekscape Network.